Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Bake with Legend offer fans of the Great British Bake Off the chance to bake alongside their favourite stars from the show. If you're planning a special birthday, a hen party, or perhaps in charge of your next work social, why not get in touch with us to discuss arranging an event for you? We also offer Bake with a Legend at Home, where one of our Bake Off alumni can come and lead a baking class in your own accommodation. Just imagine that, Howard or Jane coming round and teaching you afternoon tea. For more information, visit bakewithalegend.com or email info@bakewithalegend.com.
One which really got my goat was the most stunning milk sweets ever to grace the tent. Well, it's like, well, we've never done them before, so of course they're the most stunning milk sweets ever to grace the tent.
Well, hello and welcome back to episode 4. It's Dairy Week in the Bake Off tent. My name is Josh Landy, founder of Bake with a Legend. And once again, I'm joined by the brilliant Howard Middleton and Jane Beadle. Thank you so much for being back here. Howard, 4 weeks into Bake Off, it's really hotting up in the tent.
It is, isn't it? I mean, I don't know whether it's hotting up weather-wise in the tent. Do you think it's warm in the tent?
I mean, somebody said they were really hot this week. Who was it? Yeah. Was it Michelle said she was really hot? So it's early for it to be heating up in the tent.
Not hot enough for some of that ice cream to freeze. It was Henry's, wasn't it?
Oh, I know. Do you know, I don't know what was the matter with that freezer. It really looked as if it should have frozen better than that.
It did, and I thought it was in there long enough. It seemed, I know you can't always tell timings, but...
You cannot tell timings. Do you ever think, like, if you watch football highlights, I'm a big football fan, if you watch some of the football highlights, you can see the minute of the game that this took place in. You know, it will tell you this is a 70-second minute, and you've got some context about, oh, there's only 20 minutes of the game left, so they had a big chance to equalise. You don't quite get that in the tent. You get that, oh, we've had half an hour, we're halfway through. But it's very hard as a viewer because it's almost for the drama they put in, you know, these moments. You're not quite sure how long they really have got left.
No, I think they can be quite creative with the kind of editing.
Yeah.
Obviously, they are absolutely on the money in terms of how much time the individual bakers have to be able to do that task. If it's 2 hours, it is 2 hours. But I think sometimes the editing is a little bit...
Yeah, just when Henry was going to the freezer, and you know, he seemed fairly calm when they were going in, that he'd have enough time. And then very quickly it didn't. And another person who didn't have time this week was Priya. I mean, she was probably the most unready anyone has ever been for handing in their bake at, you know, at the end of a technical. It was extraordinary.
Yeah, it was extraordinary. I know things go horribly wrong in the tent, and she was completely thrown, wasn't she? And I think standing there stirring her lemon curd... just was the thing that ate all the time up.
I think we mentioned this in last week's podcast. When you've seen her be so calm and they're making a big thing out of the fact she's just sitting there stirring, you know that's going to come back to bite you eventually. But for the two of you, when you were in the tent, obviously you're keeping a bit of an eye on what else is going on around you. Surely it's alarm bells if everyone else seems to be flying ahead of you. I mean, you've got to just stop, don't you, and start moving on the next stage. I mean, did you ever find yourself, Howard, sort of falling a bit behind, a bit worried?
I think there's a couple of things. I think sometimes you are concentrating, particularly in a technical, you're concentrating so much on your own bake that you don't realise what's happening around you. I remember there was one particular bake when we had to do custard tarts, and I was absolutely shocked. I thought, do you know, I'm definitely going to be bottom here, because I couldn't get two of them actually out of the tin. And then you stop, and you turn around and you see everybody else has had the same problem, and you're suddenly relieved.
Yeah.
You think, but you haven't had a chance to kind of survey what's happening in the temp because you've been concentrating so much on your own. But I think the other thing is sometimes it's almost like a sort of self-fulfilling prophecy. You sort of know that stuff is going wrong, and actually you don't particularly know what to do to stop it. You're on this kind of roller coaster. And I can well imagine that that Priya was in that situation knowing that this is not going to end well. But she just couldn't dig herself out of it, really.
Couldn't get the time back, no. so to speak. We've had a number of questions in from the listeners. People have been emailing the bakedown at bakewithalegend.com. You can tweet in at bakewithalegend. And Howard, Gary Birdle has been in touch, and he wants to know who eats all the food. And there's a few questions I think people want to know about this. One, who eats all the food? Do you get to eat some of the food? And, you know, does any of it just end up getting thrown away?
I don't think very much gets thrown away, to be perfectly honest. I think it depends upon the individual bake. So there will be some bakes where you're doing tiny little things like petit four or something like that, where actually most of it has probably gone at the judging, you know, or a good proportion. The crew do obviously want to sample. And I think there was particular for us in our year, I think it was week three before we actually got an opportunity to taste what we'd baked. We had to plead to say, could you just leave us a little bit of something?
So had they taken it away?
Yeah, because obviously once the judging has finished, if the judges have said this was absolutely delicious, then you can bet that the rest of the crew want to taste that. And sometimes you hadn't had the opportunity to taste your own bake to see whether you agreed it was delicious, or if they'd said, you know, this is dreadful, it's underbaked or whatever. You want to have the opportunity. So they used to put us a little bit, after week three, I think they used to leave us a little sample of our bakes in the proving drawer.
Of your own bake?
Of our own bake, so that we could actually taste what it tasted
and
like.
And Jane, that would allow you the opportunity to go, well, actually, their feedback was accurate, or I disagreed, because you've got an opportunity to taste exactly what they've just done.
Well, it was slightly different for us.
Oh, okay.
Because they blazed a trail for us.
You're a pioneer, Howard.
A pioneer. They brought us up a tray of everybody's bake to the green room. So we could all, not huge amounts, because the crew did eat most of it, but we had enough that we could taste everybody's bake. So we could go, yes, actually, Howard, yours really did taste terrible, or something. Well, we never said that, of course. But yeah, we all had the opportunity to taste everybody's bake. They just bring us a tray up. But I did feel sorry for some of the crew, because we were all taken outside during bakes or after bakes to, you know, how did that go? How do you feel? You know, you see all those little things that we all do to camera. And if there's been a particularly delicious bake, the poor old crew are out in the field trying to record you, and they watch the rest of the crew descend on whatever this delicious bake was. And you'll hear them on the radio going, can you save me a bit? Save me some. And they never do. They always eat them all.
I love it. They're fighting to get an interview with you done, where presumably they're asking you, how do you feel this morning went? Or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah. And in the background, their eyes are really distracted by a crowd of other people.
They do. And you know when one is a bad bake, because there's usually some left.
Yes.
All right. Well, I can imagine.
Never happened to me or you, Howard, as far as I remember.
I think one. Yes.
just the one.
Trey Page. Yes.
Don't admit to it.
Gary, thanks for your question. I hope that's answered you. Lisa Jones has been in touch. She says, how much time do you get on day one between the signature and the technical? And do you go off and have lunch? So, and where do you have lunch? Can you put in a request for lunch? Is it a particularly nice lunch you get? Tell us all about that gap in between, you know, on day one.
I think it varies, actually, because obviously there are lots of things that need to be done. So we've mentioned about doing the interviews. How do you think that went? What are you expecting from the technical? Are you looking forward to that? But also there's the judging to take place. So it can vary how much time you've got between finishing the signature and starting the technical.
So roughly you might have a couple of hours
and
you would go and have lunch.
Yeah, but again, for me, I was quite a nervous baker. I know people said that on the surface I could look quite calm, but I found at certain points that I was quite anxious about it. Less anxious about the technical, because there's very little you can do about it. But you don't always feel like having something to eat. If you're so absorbed in doing the bakes, I found that I lost my appetite a little bit.
I'm assuming, Jane, you don't have to bring your own packed lunch. Oh, I imagine Henry has. I like the idea. Henry's got his little lunch box.
I bet he has.
He's got his sandwiches with the crust cut off, cut in fours. But presumably they provide a nice meal for you to provide for you between the gap.
They do. So an outside caterer comes in, one of these ones that will work on any film set and feed all the crew and us as well. So we all go and queue up and get our plate of whatever it was, which I have to say was pretty good, actually. We had some nice food, but we didn't always have a huge amount of time to eat it because there are various things that happen. You know, we do have to go out and be filmed. Where you see people sitting at their bench gazing lovingly at their bake, we have to go back and have those shots done. There's all sorts of things that go on and it has to happen. So you might be halfway through your lunch and then you get called out and have to go and do that.
And would you sit and have lunch together with the other contestants? You might be with some crew?
No, we never spent any time with the crew. We were all together, and actually we brought board games in. And somebody would have music, so we'd play board games the whole time. So the games, whoever brought them in, and Andrew was a great one for bringing in board games, they would be there for the whole time we were... Well, Andrew was there for the whole 10 weeks. So, you know, we played some fantastic board games. We had an absolute hoot. There was one comfy chair, and Andrew likes to have a little snooze in the middle of the day, so he'd be the one that used to snooze. He'd have a little snore in the corner and he could sleep through a bomb going off. But the rest of us were either being asked whether we'd made any changes to our recipes or whether we'd, left something out, put something in, or we were playing board games or we were eating. You know, we had plenty of things to do.
You know where, Howard, you mentioned there about having to go off and do the interviews. How did this morning go? Would all, let's say week four, you've got 10 people there in the tent, would everyone be pulled out? And how did it go for you this morning? Or is it they just pick out the people that did particularly badly or well? Do you think everyone got pulled out?
I think generally, again, because they're wanting as much flexibility as possible when it comes to the edit, I think generally... Almost everybody, if not everybody, you know, has to do those interviews, really.
And Jane, we've seen some people already in this series get fairly emotional doing those interviews. Would you have the ability to say, look, give me a few minutes, or they'd be quite strict with you and go, no, we need to do this now, and, you know, whatever your emotion is, your emotion is?
Well, they have a very, very tight schedule, especially at early stages, and they've got to get everything done and then back into the tent. You know, very often we didn't finish till 7:30, 8 o'clock in the evening. So, I don't have time to let you go and have a weep in the corner. If you're being interviewed, you're being interviewed. But they're kind and they don't try and, you know, let you be upset on camera. It just happens. People are tired. People are very emotionally charged. And if you have a little cry, you have a little cry, and just hope that they don't show it.
So look, let's look back on the week in the tent. And I can't ask either of you about your memories of Dairy Week, can I, Howard? It's a new one, which you don't get too many new ones in Bake Off. We didn't see this one coming.
No, it's interesting. Although, I thinking back to my first week in the tent, Cake Week, I can remember putting yogurt or sour cream or something in the cake that I was doing. I think it's just that it's never been kind of categorised as... Dairy Week.
You're
before.
A trailblazer, Howard. The trailblazer. Fancy putting dairy in a cake.
Do you think it's unusual? No, not really.
So it's a more a rebrand of the week, Jane, would you say?
Well, Dairy Week. I honestly...
I'm not sure you're too impressed here.
I love Bake Off, and I have nothing but respect for their production company, Love Productions. But seriously, Dairy Week. I mean, it was as though we've never put dairy in cakes. Well, we've always put dairy in cakes. And yeah, the showstopper, I was less than impressed with the showstopper. There are so many things that they could have done for that rather than basically condensing some milk down and turning them into sweets. It's as though they don't want to repeat something that possibly has happened in previous years, but I don't think they showed the most amount of imagination for this week. I'm sorry to be a real party pooper and really be miserable about this, but they could have found something better to do for the
Howard, just because Jane's spoken like that, don't think you're getting off Howard's hump this week. We're still coming to you later.
I'll still have a hump. Okay, well,
that's great. Look, I mean, we'll come on to then the signature to start with. And the challenge was to make a dairy cake. A cake mixture must include a cultured dairy product, perhaps buttermilk, yogurt, to make a moist sponge. And they were given 2 hours, 15 minutes. Paul said he wanted to celebrate dairy. And there was something, was it Noel's narration that really appealed to you, Howard?
The dairy world is a hotbed of innovation. Now, artisan bakers are bucking the plant-based trend and harnessing the very best it has to offer. And with its creamy decadence and microbial benefits, cultured dairy is fast becoming a darling of cake making. It's like, I can't believe that.
Oh, I love it.
Oh,
Do the microbes live, actually, if they're baked? I don't know. If you just kill them all off by sticking them in the oven.
I just thought... Do you know, like you were saying, Jane, we have been putting dairy and cultured dairy in bakes for quite some time. Oh,
goodness, yeah. I made some scones the other day with buttermilk in.
No.
I did.
They did make it sound rather novel. That is certainly true. What do you think you'd have gone for here, Jane? You got 2 hours, 15 minutes to do. So what would you have been your default direction you'd have probably taken this in?
I would probably have gone for buttermilk because I like using buttermilk. Does anybody know how you make buttermilk?
You should tell us.
Yeah, shall I tell you how you make buttermilk? I made some buttermilk with somebody at the weekend. If you just put some double cream in a jam jar, fill it about half full, and shake it for a long time, you'll suddenly hear it go slosh, slosh, slosh.
Yeah.
Mm.
In it, you'll have then a lump of butter, which you take out and rinse, and the stuff that's left is buttermilk. And yes, you can add salt to your butter and make it tasty, but the stuff that's left is buttermilk, and it's brilliant. It's better than the stuff you buy in the shops. You just divided it. So you've got the butter from the cream and you've got the buttermilk from the cream. I did that with a children's class, and we put marbles in the jar because it helps agitate. And one child was so vigorous that we smashed the jar. But don't put a marble in. But you can do it very, very easily. Or you can just whack it. I think Jamie Oliver... put it in a food processor, and when you hear the food processor suddenly make a different noise, your buttermilk is separated from your butter. So brilliant stuff, buttermilk. Again, it's been used. You use it in soda bread. You can use it in so many things. It is something that we have been using for years and years. So I would have probably gone for a lovely flavoured bundt of some description. I particularly like caramel. So, you know, we are looking autumnal. Ish, so apple, cinnamon with a nice toffee nut topping, I think would probably be one of the things I'd go for.
Lovely. And we saw how a lot of people go to yogurt. Would you have reached for the yogurt?
Yes, I remember. I think I put some yogurt in the first showstopper that I did. And it's one of those things where when you are new in the Bake Off tent, you're not quite used to having questions directed at you. And one of the production team said, what would you put in yogurt in your bake for? And I didn't know at the time. And I said it's a wet ingredient to counteract the dry ingredients. And you think, what a stupid thing to say. But I think one or two people were saying they weren't quite sure about what the cultured dairy was doing to their bakes, but they were putting it in basically to kind of boost the bakes a little bit of microbial benefit.
A little bit of microbial whatever. The thing is with these yogurt and buttermilk is they're quite acidic. And if you put something acidic in with a raising agent, it will boost the raising agent. So say you're making a soda bread and you don't have buttermilk or yogurt, you can make yogurt with it as well. Add some lemon juice to your milk before you put it in, and then it goes all a bit curdly. And that will then activate the bicarbonate of soda. So that's what they're doing. It's just something, and I'm by no means a scientist, it's something to do with the acid activating the raising agent that gives it that extra little bit of lift.
But that is a more convincing answer than
putting wet with dry.
Wet with dry.
Yes, yes. It is.
Howard, I don't want to draw immediate assumptions, but I wondered if you were interested in what Rosie went for here, given the vodka and limoncello flavours. did that one catch your eye?
Yeah, David had got limoncello as well.
Of course,
I do like a bit of limoncello in a bit, yes. Although I have to say I was drawn to Henry's. I liked the Ode to a German Breakfast. I remember of a particular cake that I had in Amsterdam once, which was not that kind of cake.
Howard, a cake
in Amsterdam. No, it was apple and streusely and nutty and what have you, and that kind of very kind of German Dutch kind of vibe to a cake. I think it's quite nice.
All right, we could do a whole podcast about your trip to Amsterdam, another time.
Yeah, another time.
Confessions of a Baker.
Jane, there was Helena who went for a ghost theme. I mean, every single week now we are. There's no getting away from what her vibe is there?
No, there isn't. But I quite like it. If we think about last year with Kim Joy, everything was a little animal, and she's done pretty well out of it. She's got her book out, and it's all absolutely gorgeous.
Did you get sent the book?
No, I didn't get sent. I didn't get sent the book.
I haven't either.
Please contact me via the website if you want my postal address.
I've seen a lot of people did get sent the book, yes, so I don't know what it'd be like you two.
Didn't you get one, Howard?
No.
No. We didn't. Neither Howard nor I got one.
We'll keep an eye on.
Going back to Helena's ghost, I don't mind the theme. I really like Helena. I think she's got her own personality and she does what she does, and she does it very well. And the ghost cake, I wouldn't have thought to do that. I thought it was a very sweet little ghost with the pipe flowers on its head. And what did Prue call her? Yes, she said it was good for a mad woman.
Mm. Yeah, not the kindest.
I'm not sure. She just meant it nicely, didn't she? It was amusing because then somebody said something about pot calling the kettle black or something.
It was quite endearing.
But I think it was meant to be endearing, indeed. But I think she's doing some stunning bakes, and the fact that she might have a spider or a ghost or something like that is.
She's different.
She's different. Very creative thing. So I like her.
Absolutely. Now, Howard, Michelle, we can't get away from what happened. She broke the stand. I mean, we had the drama in last year's final. Rahul, didn't he? He had the exploding jar, and that broke. This wasn't quite as dramatic, but there was a bit of drama there, and you had Michael coming over to the rescue as if he was Superman, saying it's about to sink, it's going to sink, just in time before it tantalisingly didn't fall. And then you had Phil sort of holding up a plate just to make sure it was supported until an alternative stand was found.
Yeah. It's funny, actually, because I used to have a beautiful Scandinavian glass stand, and I did exactly the same thing, where sometimes if you are just tipping something out a little bit too firmly, you catch the edge of it. And sadly, that's what happened, wasn't it?
Yeah, I felt sorry for her. It's also still nerves as well, and you're concerned about things coming out of tins and things. And they're fairly hefty, some of those tins.
It felt in the circumstance it could have gone worse. So the cake didn't fall.
No.
It could have easily sort of gone half of it and fallen over.
Did it have any shards of pottery in it, though?
Oh, wow.
I don't know.
Seemed hopefully everyone
that would have been a worry, wouldn't it?
That would have been. Well, in the end, Paul said it wasn't quite as loose and open like he expected, and Prue said it was a little bit claggy. So wasn't the best feedback at the end of the road for Michelle. We had Phil had his truckingly lovely rose cake, Priya with a choc chip banana cake, and Michael used two types of cultured dairy, using sour cream and a cheesecake, Jane. That was a little bit different.
Yes. I mean, just going back to Michelle's first.
Yes.
As soon as I knew what she was doing and she was going to do rhubarb, I immediately thought, before we even saw it, that it's going to be claggy. Because you put something, a fruit like rhubarb, particularly in a bake, And it does go soggy. You have to be very careful on the fruit that you choose. And we all make those mistakes. But rhubarb has been a problem over the years in Bake Off. Sorry, you were asking me about Michael's yeah. with his two different types of cultured dairy. I really felt sorry for him, actually, because he was trying and pushing the boat out. And it did look very pretty. And as they said, it tasted great. He had a difficult tin with a difficult bake. I think had he wanted to do that in hindsight, if he'd had a spring form tin, so he could have got the whole thing out,
yep.
then that might have been a better choice. But it's very easy to decide to say that after the event. My heart went out to him because it had so badly stuck in there. But I'm going to make a plug for Nancy, the wonderful Nancy Birtwistle, who knows. Oh, she answers all my problems. She is absolutely amazing. She has this wonderful lining paste that is you use equal amounts of Trex flour and vegetable oil, mix it all up together, shove it in the fridge, absolutely fine, keeps for months, and then paint your tin with that stuff and things miraculously come out of the tin. So
smoothly.
Michael, if you're listening, check out Nancy's lining paste, because any awkward shaped tins like those bunt tins, it really does help get things out.
Michael referred how that he had made this cake 10 times during the week, and he's young, maybe he had a bit more time on his hands, maybe he wasn't exaggerating. He said it had only worked once. I mean, a 10% ratio isn't a great one to be walking into this week, was it?
It isn't, but as I say, sometimes common sense departs from you when you're going into the Bake Off tent. You think, oh, if there's just that chance that it might work, because actually, when it has worked, it's been absolutely fantastic. Mm-hmm. But it was one of those things, when he took it out and it split, I found myself, I literally went, oh, like that at the TV. And it's like, you know, I'm getting quite emotionally involved here. I need to just take a break.
Yeah, Henry was looking at it, sort of desperately trying to think of what he could say.
Yeah.
And there didn't seem to be too much he could contribute. And then you saw the VT of Michael ultimately after he'd had his feedback saying, you know, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. It's just a cake.
Yeah.
It was sort of a very Bake Off emotive statement. So, yeah, overall, which one did you think was best, Jane, of all the signatures?
It's a difficult one, actually. I liked Henry's. I thought it looked very smart. I like those dried apples he had on the top. I like David's. My first week in the tent, I did a lemon and poppy seed and had some limoncello in there. So it's obviously a flavour I really like. And it was described as very neat, beautiful, light and fantastic. Yeah, I would say they would be my two choices. They're also the flavours that I like. So, yeah, I'd go for Henry and David's.
This week's episode of The Bake Down is in association with our friends at Seed and Bean Chocolates. Seed and Bean truly live on the wilder side of taste, creating adventurous, botanically inspired flavours using only 100% organic ingredients. If you head to their website at seedandbean.co.uk, you'll receive 25% off your purchase using the code THEBAKEDOWN when you check out. It's time in the podcast for self-raising selfies. This is the part in the podcast we want to hear from you if you've ever bumped into or met a Bake Off star. Jane Deacon was in touch on Twitter a few weeks ago. She says, well done on the first episode of the podcast. It's been warm, witty and funny. And strangely enough, I spotted Howard Middleton by the live stream a few weeks ago. He looked like he was in quite a hurry, so I didn't want to stop him. Plus, I was a bit starstruck and didn't know what to say. He has the kindest face, like a delightful Nick Park creation in human form. Have you ever had such a compliment, Howard?
Do you know, it's funny, actually, because I remember when I was on Bake Off, somebody, I think it was in one of the newspapers, someone had put a picture of Wallace and Gromit and said, not like me. Is it Wallace is the guy, Gromit's the dog, is it?
Yes.
Yeah, so I'm like Wallace, yeah, apparently.
More cheese, more Gromit.
Cheese, Gromit, yes.
Are you often hanging out by the Lyceum, Howard?
I was in a hurry, wasn't I, apparently? Oh, dear. I did judge a cake contest at the Lyceum a few weeks ago, so it may have been that I was I was like, oh, perhaps I was just taking my mum to the bus stop.
Were you in a hurry?
Not walking
the dog. You were in a hurry. Were you running late for that competition?
I don't know. But if Jane sees me again, then please do stop me and don't be so starstruck.
Jane, we're going to send you one of Howard's books as a congratulations for this spot. And if you have bumped into someone from Bake Off, or you've got a good story from over the years, do let us know. You can email us thebakedown@bakewithalegend.com or tweet us at bakewithalegend. So it's time to turn our attention to the technical. And this was a throwback to Tudor times, Jane, wasn't it? They were asked to make 12 maids of honour. They were told it was going to need a flaky rough pastry case, one layer of lemon curd, silky smooth well-risen cheese curd, filling topped with a Tudor rose, and 2 hours to do this. And was it the worst effort ever from a bake-off group at a technical challenge?
Well, if the judges were to be believed, then yes, it was. But, so, Maids of Honour, Richmond Maids of Honour, I think, was the original name, because it was believed that the ladies-in-waiting, or the Maids of Honour in the court of Henry VIII, particularly liked these tarts when they were at Richmond. So they're called Richmond. I did have a little Google, and all the ones that you see popping up online from some very, very well-known chefs and bakers didn't quite look like the ones they had in the tent. They were all quite shallow, the ones that you will see.
Well, and that was something that Paul was criticising.
Yes, they were criticising it for the bakers in the technical not having them deep enough. They were all the ones I've seen online are quite shallow. Prue said to Helena that hers was more like short crust, and perhaps she's come up with a new recipe, but they tasted lovely. I think there are recipes online where they've been made out of short crust. So yeah, I think maybe they were treated a bit harshly, the bakers in this challenge. I'm salivating at the thought of them because I'm a little bit hungry, and they're just the sort of thing that I like. A little bit of cheesecake, a little bit of lemon curd. I think they were treated a little bit harshly. They had a lot to do in the time.
There's no doubt it was a tough challenge.
It was a tough challenge, yeah. I mean, I suppose on the one hand, again, you are guided by the size of the tin that you've got. So I suppose they might have thought, maybe I should bring it to the rim of the tin rather than doing it shallower than that. But lots of things to do, you know, making the lemon curd and doing the pastry, everything from scratch. And I don't think most people knew what a Tudor rose looked like either, which was a bit tricky.
What did you think, though, of Helena leaving out the water?
It's very easy to leave something out. We've all done it. We've even done it at Bake with a Legend classes sometimes.
It is true.
You get so carried away with what you're doing. And I don't know how detailed the instructions were. I suspect the instructions were pretty sparse. So maybe she was just trying to rush through it. There's a lot to do. A 2-hour challenge?
Yes.
There's a lot to do. It's so easy to forget something. I would have thought she might have thought, hello, it is a bit dry, let's sling some more water in it. Oh, what do you mean more water? Some water. Just because the texture wasn't very good. But the thing that gets me with all the technicals, and I don't know whether I mentioned it in previous podcasts, we were not allowed to talk to any other person.
Well, this was an extreme one where Michelle basically says, you know, oh, Phil, how do you make curd? There was this question, they were sort of in the freezer, and obviously they've all got, you know better than me, you're obviously mic'd up, but the way it was looked is that she's gone to the side almost for some reassurance, and she was given it.
Yeah, I think, as we were saying, it's almost unheard of, isn't it?
Completely. Obviously. We would be pulled up for it. Don't even turn around and look at the person behind you.
But if you're being pulled up by that, by the producers, who, of course, we never see as the viewers, what do you think of the fact that it was shown on air? And there's no need to show that on air. They could have just had the conversation with the two of them at the time and reminded them not to confer. But that they've showed it on air, what do you make of that, Howard?
I suppose there's a couple of things you can make of it. One, either somebody is saying, if you're not sure, ask somebody else. So they're being actively encouraged to do a bit of chatting, or they've realised that actually it's just a bit of good TV. So even if they've been told not to confer, we might as well show it if somebody's done that.
It's not the first week that they've done it. No. So I think perhaps they've relaxed the rules.
It does seem more relaxed from what you said.
So.
Michelle also did point out that she was Welsh and therefore might not know what an English rose looks like and could be forgiven for doing that. I just want to talk about Priya's. I'm not sure I've ever seen anything handed in that looked as incorrect and far away from what was being asked for as what she managed to do. I mean, it was terrible, wasn't it? Jane, what did you make of it?
I really felt sorry for her. She was just awful. I've never seen anything like that, to be honest. But you do get a bit carried away with a task. And she was making her lemon curd in the saucepan and you have to constantly stir it. I make my lemon curd in a bain-marie. So you know, I have it in a bowl over a saucepan of barely simmering water. And you can sort of walk away and do something else and come back and give it a little stir and walk away and come back and do a little stir. There's much less chance for it to curdle or for you to end up with scrambled eggs. And I think maybe that was just a little bit of lack of experience. I don't know. They weren't using corn flour in their lemon curd as far as I could make out. It was just eggs, sugar and lemon. I think that's just a lack of experience. But once she'd got it there, she could not leave it and nobody's allowed to help her because I used to try and get the crew that were hanging about by my bench to stir things so I could walk away and they were always told they weren't allowed to. So I think that's just a little bit of lack of experience. Maybe she has never made lemon curd before or any sort of curd before. And I felt for her because once your time's gone, your time's gone. What she probably should have done was make her pastry first, get it in the fridge. Did she make a pastry first and then get it in the fridge? But she, she should still have managed with 2 hours. So I don't quite know what happened. And you don't always see what's gone on. You just see the good bits in the edit. My heart went out to her.
Howard, have you ever seen Paul refuse to even get his fingers involved? He didn't try them, did he?
He didn't try them, no.
Which I've never seen. I'm not sure.
I think there have been certain examples where he's kind of broken into something and seen that it's raw inside and refused to eat it. But I think this was, he was literally just going on appearances. He just wasn't prepared to even touch it.
I can't say I blame him, to be honest. It looks like the dog had run off with it.
I think it's interesting as well that we've spoken before about the fact that sometimes common sense just leaves you. When you think about the tiny amount of lemon curd that would actually have been going in those tarts, you know, it wouldn't really have mattered if it was a bit on the runny side. You could have, you know, and people, I think, could realise that it is going to firm up a little bit as it cools down. So I think she just got her priorities completely wrong, really.
Nobody came out looking, you know, fantastic in this challenge, and Paul said, you know, collectively they were really bad. But your favourite Henry there coming in at third, David second, and Steph first. I mean, you know, someone had to win, and it was Steph.
And she was told not to look so pleased about it. It was no great shakes, wasn't she?
It was a compliment followed by a, you know, being taken away fairly rapidly.
We had a week like that. Bakewell tarts. We had the most disastrous. It almost looked as bad as that. I can't remember who. It could have been Rav, who had one that looked as though it had been run over by a camera. On wheels, obviously.
Deserved winner, Steph?
Yes. Yes, I mean, it was difficult to decide which one was the least of the worst, really. But it's always very encouraging if you've done a particularly, you know, unsuccessful bake that everybody else has done it badly too.
Safety in numbers.
Safety in numbers, yeah.
Let's turn our attention to the showstopper. Howard, they were asked to create a stunning display of milk-based Indian sweets known as Mishti. The display should have 3 different types and 12 of each. Paul suggested it could be a centrepiece for a stunning party or a wedding, and they had 3.5 hours. And this seemed to, you know, a challenge for most of them, Howard, that they didn't relish, certainly, you'd say.
I think it's a difficult one because I wouldn't know where to start with it. So, I mean, obviously, because this is a showstopper, you are, and it's not like it being a technical, thank goodness, but you are able to do some research into them. But it looked as if that two of the sweets had to be made using this particular process where they thicken the milk in a pan. And the other one could be a kind of free-form thing which just used some form of either condensed milk or something like that. But just a bit of an odd challenge,
really. They suggested this was almost a lifeline. You know, I think that was the wording. It was a lifeline from Paul and Prue. Did that suggest that was introduced then whilst they were baking, or that had been arranged beforehand? It wasn't quite clear to me.
I think it had been arranged beforehand. I think they would have been, yeah, definitely, they would have been given a brief which said you must make two of these sweets, two varieties using this method, and your third one can be done using condensed milk or something like that.
I agree with Howard. It sounded as though it was one of those things that had suddenly been taken pity on, and it happened there and then, but they wouldn't have done that. They would have had to have got in a lot of condensed milk. They would have had to have submitted their recipes. So it would have been part of the original brief.
Okay, and we were told there was over 100 mishti to choose from. So they presumably would have, you know, had some kind of list, would they, Jane, that would have been sent to them in advance to say this is, you know, what we categorise as mishti, or would that not have happened?
No, I don't think that would have happened, because that would have been considered to be leading them in a certain direction. I think they would have been told it was mishti, do your research, submit your recipes, and we will tell you if it hits the brief, and we'll tell you if it doesn't. No, we'll tell you if it doesn't hit the brief, and you'll have to go and have another think about it, but we won't tell you where you've gone wrong, because they can't help you, because it's not fair on anybody else. So I am now intrigued. I have a real, real issue with this challenge.
Go on, challenge. Jen.
As beautiful as they were, and I think the flavours were fantastic, and there's no criticism of the bakers whatsoever, what sort of challenge was that in a baking show? The challenge was to get that milk condensed. Now, I've condensed milk at home. It takes absolutely blimmin' ages. And at the end of it, you've got condensed milk. Frankly, you can go and buy a tin. They didn't have to do any baking. A couple of them chose to deep fry things. I think David made a, what do you call it, tweel to put his stuff on. This was condensing milk and sticking flavours in it. Oh, interesting, maybe. It was not a baking showstopper. I really think that they chose this Dairy Week, and then they thought, oh my goodness, what can we do for the final? Did they have to use an oven? No. Did they have to steam anything? No. They just stuck some milk in a saucepan and let it go down till it was thick. And that was the challenge, was getting that thick in the time. I'm really sorry, Love Productions, about this, if any of you are listening. I think it was one of the worst show-stopping challenges that they've had in 10 years.
Strong review from Jane. Mm. Howard, did you also felt that this was perhaps not one of the strongest challenges that's ever been set?
No, and I wonder, as I say, I wonder whether, in a way, the challenges this week were sort of in the wrong order, whether perhaps the cake would have made a better showstopper, you know. Perhaps mishti might have been a technical challenge or something like that, rather than, I don't know, but it just
possibly
didn't. I think Jane's right that it didn't feel like this was the most appropriate thing for Dairy Week to show off their real show-stopping talents.
I wonder if it's because that they don't want to repeat things. There was a wonderful cheesecake week in Series 6, Nadia's year, where she condensed some flavours, didn't she? I think she did an ice cream soda flavour, yeah, didn't she? That was the week that I really thought, oh, this woman has got it. You know, we've had baked custards over the years that are particularly tricky. Yeah, I remember Ian Cumming making an amazing one year. I've got a dairy cookbook that I've had for probably 40 years. It's thick. There are plenty of challenges that you could do that involves baking. I just think they thought it was a great idea. They thought it would look pretty, but I just think, please repeat things, because you know, over 10 years, you're going to have repetition, aren't you? There's no harm in that.
Howard, Phil, in his own words, said he was a long way out of his comfort zone. Could you have been a long way out of his comfort zone? And what did you make of what he went for this inspiration from his garden idea? And, you know, he called it a corner of my garden.
He did, yes. I hope Norman the Gnome is not listening. I wasn't a great fan of Norman the Gnome. I think the problem is sometimes that people think that the kind of display items are going to help their bakes, and actually it will. I don't think it did in this case. If Norman had been edible, I would have been very, very impressed. But it just looked like something that he'd put on the side, didn't it? It wasn't.
That's exactly what it was. Yes. Poor Norman the Gnome.
You know, and Paul even said, you know, forgetting, you know, the gnome, which you might not be a fan of, his actual, you know, bake tasted, you know, that a bit fake and had gone overboard, and it was all a bit samey. So, yeah. You know, pretty strong feedback against him. Henry, we mentioned about his ice cream not setting, and his face when he lifted up his mould and it was so clear it was all a bit of a disaster. I'm sure it pained you, Jane, you know, being one of his big fans, seeing him like that.
I am a great fan of Henry's, but I am a fan of a lot of them. It was only because my Henry is, my son's a Henry. Again, the whole Enid Blyton thing from series one, from episode one, I beg your pardon. Yes, I'm... Of course, I don't like to see anybody fail. I like to see everybody do as well as they can possibly do and be beaten by the better baker on the day. So but why choose an ice cream?
Why choose an ice cream?
You do set yourself up to fail. And I think I don't know why the freezer didn't work or didn't freeze it. But I know that those things then sit on a bench waiting for judging. So if it was an ice cream... whether he was allowed to then put it back in the freezer. But, you know, it's going to melt on your bench. I had just whipped cream melt on my bench on a hot day, so...
Well, that is interesting. And he was very nice and self-deprecating, I enjoyed. When he did get that feedback and he referred to, you know, you'd eat it if you were served it, said Prue, and he said, well, maybe if you were a prisoner.
I do love Henry's sense of humour. He is very, very dry.
He is very dry, I think. He's very... He's a very lovely young man, and I think we don't like to see any of them fail, but ones so young, they have so little experience compared to some of us old hardened bakers, and your heart can't help but go out to them.
No, he was terrific. Were there any others, Jane, that sort of leapt out to you before we make some conclusions about who was right and wrong that went? I mean, you know, Steph went with this pink and pretty mishti.
So pink and pretty mishti, yes. I mean, I love the flavours. I thought she did some good flavours. Has somebody else done date and walnut? Has she done date and walnut before? I'm not sure. David's, I thought, looked lovely. I thought the thing is, they all looked different, and there was some... The thing that... Oh, how was it called? He didn't know how to pronounce it. Kura water or something, which was the flavour of pandan. Now, I've cooked with pandan, and you have to be quite subtle with it. So he obviously got a very... I don't know whether this water is easier to deal with than pandan leaves. You can do it with pandan leaves, and it's quite a strong, distinctive flavour. So he clearly got his balance of flavours just about right, and they all looked different, which looked pretty. Unlike Priya, sadly, who they all look the same. Their flavours might have been different because she had all balls, didn't she? There's a lot of balls this week, I think. There's a lot of talk about balls. So David for me, Steph for me. I thought Rosie's cocktail ones looked amazing. She did some very pretty stuff. I think generally, you know, Michael, again, I think they were described as delicious. I have no grouse with what the bakers turned out. I think on the whole, they all looked very pretty, and I would have been very delighted to have them at any event as a centrepiece.
It's now time in the show for Howard's Hump. And as I mentioned, we've heard a few negatives from Jane this week, Howard. Do you have anything else you want to let us know?
That. It's always a bit sad, I think, when you get sort of hints that these are the best bakers ever in the Bake Off tent. But those of us who were there before, and you sort of think, all right, maybe they are. But these are the hardest challenges ever. But this week, the one which really got my goat was the most stunning milk sweets ever to grace the tent. Well, it's like, well, we've never done them before, so of course they're the most stunning milk sweets ever to grace the tent. I just think, oh, please stop doing these superlatives, because it does make it. I know Bake Off is it's part of the Bake Off fabric, I suppose, now, but it just get my goat a little bit. Just give me the hump.
So it's time for Judge Jane. Jane, this is where we want to hear. Do you think Paul and Prue got it right? So Star Baker, it went to Steph. Do you agree with their decision?
Yes, I do. I mean, Steph was strong in all three challenges, wasn't she? And her first one, answer to everything cake with raspberry and chocolate. I mean, couldn't disagree with her there at all. It was delightful. She came first in the technical, and then her showstopper, her pink and pretty mishti, were described as good flavours. We have to take their word for it, but they were lovely. They were very pretty and very neat. So I think Steph was a worthy winner this week.
Yeah, I'd agree. Well done, Steph. It's never nice to see anyone leave a tent, especially not Phil, who, of course, we're fond of here at Bake with a Legend, having seen him attend one of our events last year. And in the end, despite the threat that two people could leave, it was just Phil in the end, wasn't it, Jane?
Yes, it was. And I was really sorry to see Phil go, because he was kind of doing it for us oldies, although he's considerably younger than me. Just a very indifferent week for him. Not a fantastic signature, middle of the road for his technical. But I think it was his showstopper that really dragged him down. Sort of a lot of artificial flavours in there, and perhaps Norman the Gnome let him down on the day.
So that was Dairy Week in the Bake Off tent. We started with 13, now just down to 9. Thank you so much to Howard and Jane for being here, and we look forward to seeing you next week. A reminder, if you do want to get in touch with the show about anything, maybe you've met a Bake Off star, maybe you've got a question for Howard or Jane, you can email us, thebakedown@bakewithalegend.com, or tweet us at bakewithalegend.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.